Hey everyone, you're all here for Branding Mormonism, correct?
Yes.
I'm Chelsea Archibald, I'm the chair for this one. Did anyone go to the workshop yesterday? No one went to any workshops? Okay, I'm going to introduce Randall Smith. He was employed in 1975 by the Church Graphic Design Department, where he designed and implemented the Church's first corporate identity program. Presented and approved in a temple meeting attended by Smith with the First Presidency and Quorum of the Twelve, the program initiated the first significant church branding effort. Randall is currently creative director and brand strategist at Modern Inc., a brand design agency in Salt Lake City. He is an adjunct professor of graphic design at the University of Utah and former art director of Sunstone Magazine. The respondent, Becky Johns, has a PhD in communications from the University of Utah and is an associate professor in the communications department of Weber State University.
Thank you. And as a matter of fact, Becky Johns is not here, or I don't believe so. I got an email this morning saying that she wasn't going to be able to make it, but we'll proceed without her nonetheless. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for...
Can we echo you after then, since you're not here?
This is my friend and heckler, Nolan, not sure I wanted him here, but he came up close. I'm just teasing. So... I graduated from, let's see if my little clicker works here. I graduated from the University of Utah in 1972, a long time ago, and I started my employment at the LDS Church Graphic Design Department in the fall of that, in that same year. It was, in fact, the same year that the Church Information Service changed its name from that to Public Communications Department. So at the time I started working for the church, the church really had no visual identity or corporate identity. I wonder if we can turn off the big lights here and be able to see the screen better. So each church organization had its own identity. There were sometimes symbols, thank you, sometimes symbols, sometimes logos, but there was no consistent visual or corporate identity, and each organization just kind of did its own thing. These are actual photographs from the slide presentation, which I was involved with and which I later on showed to the... I could use a light up on the podium now to review my notes. Yeah, would anyone know how to do that? So, church buildings at the time were not identified with the kind of charming sort of identifications that you can see in these older church buildings, but instead were identified with a very simple kind of sans serif typeface that had no particular uniqueness or a spirit about it, and it was in this environment then that we in the church graphic design department were approached by a member of the assistant to the Quorum of 12 Apostles, who asked us about the possibilities of designing what he referred to as a welcome sign. This is not unlike the kind of sign that we see at Protestant churches. Very frequently have a sign outside their church buildings that identify the name of the building, the denomination. Sometimes Those signs indicate meeting times, and it was thought by this assistant to the Quorum of 12 Apostles that such a sign would be appropriate for LDS meeting houses instead of this kind of typical signage that was pretty much standard at the time. Not to mention, particularly as a graphic designer, the very terrible word spacing that was evident in this. You can drive a Mack truck through some of those words there, which as a graphic designer is really difficult. So it was these sorts of issues that that were amongst the types of things in 1974 that we wanted to address when we were approached with this opportunity to design this welcome sign. It was our intent that we take this and push it much further. That is, rather than just designing a sign for the front of the meeting houses, it was our intent that we, in fact, design a logo that could be used in those circumstances as well as in all opportunities for presenting the name of the church, whether it be on a business card or a check or wherever it might be. And so we initiated an idea and ran it up the chain of command from the graphic design department at the church in 1974 that we, in fact, present to the proper individuals the idea that we introduce a church logo or a single kind of graphic device that would identify the church in all circumstances. This was of such importance that it was determined that this would be appropriate for a meeting of the First Presidency and the Quorum of 12 Apostles, and furthermore, that perhaps it could be done in I still feel like I need to see my notes better here. That it could be done in a meeting in the temple, and so a meeting was scheduled on a Thursday morning to meet with the First Presidency to the Quorum of 12 Apostles to present this idea of a church identity and a church logo. So I was pretty young at the time, in my 20s, and I probably would not have even been invited to such an important occasion had it not been for the fact that I was the one that wrote and helped prepare the slide presentation that was to be presented. This was a literal slide presentation, not the digital thing. These are slides and carousels, and we pre-recorded a narration to go with our presentation. And because I had helped prepare this, I was the one that knew best how to push the buttons and run the slideshow. So I got to go to the presentation in the temple. The narration that accompanied the event included the following that I'd like to read to you. Many nonprofit business and government groups have developed programs to ensure a distinctive current visual representation in print and electronic media. Such a program is called a visual identity program. The programs represented here are easily identified because in each case, the organization has consistently applied a single visual element throughout its communication. Today, we would like to present recommendations for the basis of a visual identity program for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We had explored in our preparation for this event lots of different possibilities for presenting a church logo. We considered some obvious things like the Angel Moroni. We considered the Christus statue, which had recently become and still is a very popular, iconic kind of representation of the church. We considered the Salt Lake Temple, but in the end, we felt like the only truly appropriate logo for the church would be the church's name. And we designed the name in a unique format that might be able to be recognized because of its uniqueness. We were challenged with, of course, a very long name, which is not ideal when we're talking about designing logos, but we came up with a solution that we
we felt appropriate, and we presented that in this temple meeting in 1974. And this was the church logo that we designed and presented. We, addressing the particular need of having a welcome sign, we prepared a mock-up, a little mock-up, and then photographed in such a way that it might look like it was in front of a church building, representing the suggestion that we introduce this welcome sign, this this thing that can be put out in front of a church meeting house and show you, first of all, that you're welcome, and secondly, meeting times and even contact information. We cut out little letters, pasted them on a building, and photographed that to suggest the nature of metal letters. We showed them what their stationery might look like with the new logo. This was a proposal for the First Presidency stationery, in which case we actually embossed the logo, which is a nice sort of printing technique. We even suggested that individual gen authorities could have personal stationery with an embossed logo on it. The object in all these cases was to make it more representative of all of the situations in which the church logo might be needed. And the presentation went pretty smoothly. There was very few questions, only one or two, and I don't really even remember those questions at this point, although I do remember that that one question was asked, and I thought it was the most insightful of all the questions, and there was only a couple of them anyway, by Ezra Taft Benson, who was the president of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles at the time. And in part because I was familiar with, as were most at the time, President Benson's somewhat overt political stances, I had always had a somewhat diminished feeling about Ezra Taft Benson and his particular approach to politics. And so I was somewhat surprised by the fact that it was he that asked the only important question at the time. In any case, it was passed by a unanimous vote, and we proceeded to implement what we call the visual identity program, which most companies call corporate identity programs, but we didn't feel that terminology quite appropriate. So I thought it was funny, though, that when we presented this to them, they approved absolutely everything except one thing. They said, it's fine for everyone else to have this new logo and stationery. I mean, from Relief Society to every organization was literally forced to adopt. And in the case of Relief Society, who had kind of a cool little RS logo and has had for many, many years, and they still use it, but on their stationery, they and others were forced to adopt the new visual identity program. However, the general authorities said, you know, we want to keep our own letterhead, which is not what we'd recommend for, you know, branding purposes. And this, in fact, is the letterhead that they're still using to this very day. They did not adopt the standardized church logo and stationery that everyone else did. So 1977, two or three years later, we completed what we would call the Visual Identity Handbook, and that is that effort to standardize all of the church materials and provide guidelines for its use. So these are some examples from the Visual Identity Handbook, which I helped write and produce, showing the logo. In this case, we prepared about 16 different languages, and it was our attempt to design the logo so it had some consistency in its visual appearance, no matter what language.
We showed, you know, how it should be presented in a proper fashion. We prepared guidelines for its use. We showed what not to do, inappropriate uses of the logo. Prepared, you know, detailed instructions on how to prepare and present the logo and all of its uses. And he gave them a reproduction copy so that they could use it. You had a question?
I'm sorry. Are you going to tell us what Benson's question was?
You know, I don't remember.
Oh, you don't remember.
I don't. You know, I've often thought that I should have followed the church recommendations. You know, write things down in a journal or something. And I don't even know.
Right, you could make one.
I could.
Are you going to tell us what font that is?
This is a font called Baker Signet. It was an available font at the time. We modified it to some degree. Certain characters we changed because of their particular relationship to each other. Modified a few things here and there, but it was based upon an existing typeface, which is unlike the current face, which we'll talk about in a moment. We even prepared color guidelines. We called this LDS gray. It was the particular warm gray that we recommended for reproduction of the church logo. So the whole idea of a church visual identity program originated with the graphic design department of the church. It was not something from public communications. It was our own idea. It came out of our background as designers who are taught in school the value of consistency of appearance in managing the perception of a company. So the term branding was not in use at that time. That idea did not come about till much later. But some of the basics of branding are inherent within the design profession, and that's how it originated at that time.
You mentioned an assistant to the Quorum of the Twelve.
Correct.
So it wasn't his idea. You went to him.
No, it was his idea for the welcome sign.
Oh,
it was our idea to take that opportunity and turn it into a logo. That was our suggestion. He only suggested that we have a sign to welcome visitors to meeting houses. One thing that's probably not well known is that my immediate supervisor was Stan Thurman. Stan Thurman had come from Saul Bass & Associates. Saul Bass & Associates is a very well-known and highly respected corporate identity design firm. They're in Los Angeles, and Stan came to the church employment from Saul Bass & Associates, and at Saul Bass, he had participated in the design of what, up to that time, was one of the largest corporate identity programs ever implemented in graphic design history, one of the biggest fees for such. Was that which was done for the Bell telephone system. And if you're old enough to remember, you know, one time there was only one telephone system from coast to coast, and that was, in fact, the Bell telephone system. And it was designed by Saul Bass & Associates, where Stan Thurman had worked just prior to coming to church employment. So he and I worked on this project together, and we in fact used some of the materials of the Bell Telephone System Corporate Identity Manual, which you're seeing a copy of here, for references to the program that we're developing for the church. So the whole idea of corporate identities came about really during the 60s and 70s with the rise of national, international corporations and the recognition that you can manage the perception of your corporation if you help manage its visual appearance. So this is a current
version of the actual welcome sign that ended up being produced as a result of these efforts. This is a sign in front of a chapel out in Draper that I shot a photo of just a while ago. And you see a few of these around. Not as common, but they are in use. However, I have yet to see one that actually has any times listed on the, which maybe was one of the reasons why it was never as successful as it might have been. I guess even though we proposed, you know, a system to allow you to make those changes, I've never seen one. Has anyone ever seen one of these signs with times on it? I have not, let alone Bishop contact information. You've seen one?
It was a homemade sign.
A homemade one. Okay. Much more common, in fact, are these, which are integrated right into the masonry of the building. And this, in fact, is my own ward house. And, of course, we did get across the visitor's welcome. And they did a good job from a graphic design point of view of reproducing the characteristics of the letter forms. You can see them in different variations in single letters, each attached to buildings. So I quit church employment in 1980 and went into design practice for myself. I continued, however, to have opportunities to work on church projects. I was engaged with my own design firm to work on various things now and then, and I was approached in the mid-90s by Bonneville Communications, which is the advertising arm of the church and a part of Bonneville International. And it was asked of me if I would have any interest in looking again at the church logo design that I had participated in when I was employed by the church. It had been shown that the church had conducted a survey and in the mid-90s, and it had been discovered that hardly anyone thought of the Mormon Church as a Christian church, and due in part to that, and due also to, in the early 90s, to some evangelical Christian anti-Mormon documentaries, Godmakers 2, which came out in 1992, was quite popular. Due to those reasons, the church missionary department, public communications department, was moved underneath the administration and responsibility of the church missionary department. And so now, by the mid-90s, the missionary department, responsible for the public communications effort of the church, had suggested that it was time to change the logo that I had participated in my design back in the mid-70s. And so Bonneville Communications asked me if I had an interest in helping with that effort. But to be honest with you, despite the opportunity for a significant design project, I declined. I don't know if I declined, but I just resisted the idea. I was too heavily invested in the fact that I had designed the first church logo in the 70s. I wasn't on board with the value that they had promoted in terms of changing the logo, so I simply resisted the idea. And recognizing that, they went to some other designers, including McCray Magleby, who was at the time an associate of mine at the University of Utah Graphic Design Department, a former BYU employee. McCray Magleby, as well as Keith Eddington, designed some options for the church to consider. And they took those options and hired a New York research firm to, for over a period of 2 years, to look at those options and through in-depth studies decide which of these three options, including
my or the logo that I worked on in the 70s against these two new ones. And after producing, or so I'm told, you know, a thick binder full of results of studies, they adopted the version of the logo, which had the name of the church in letter sizes some three times larger than the rest of it. And the obvious reason was to imply the Christianity of the church. And the other versions didn't fare quite as well. I was told that this one had some warmth to it that was felt by the respondents to be better than the other options. And it certainly achieved its objectives of making the name, the Savior's name, much more visible and much more important. The version that we see today went through some refinements. It went to it started out in a conventional letter form that is available today called Trajan, but it was then hand-lettered by a New York firm that graphic designers are quite familiar with, Jonathan Heffler, produced an entire alphabet for the church so that they could, in fact, do all of the church languages that were necessary in this very same typeface. So it's still in use today. This is a letterhead, and it has adopted the same basic idea that we had proposed back in the 70s. So I'm going to give you just a little branding 101 right here. I often give a presentation to business groups called "Your Logo Is Not Your Brand." And the idea behind this thought is that even though logos, and that's what we've been talking about at this very point, are your visual representation of your brand, they really are not your brand. Your brand exists in the mind of your customer, in the mind of your client. It's their reaction to you, and it is it encompasses all of the perceptions that someone might have about your company or your brand. So in other words, anything that you have seen, heard, read, any interaction that you've had constitutes your brand. In fact, we tell our clients that you are not your brand owner. Your brand is really owned by your customer or your client. And so it is, whether we're talking about a brand for the church or a brand for a corporation. And with that in mind, the logo is only the visual representation of your brand. And it should bring to mind all of the kind of positive, negative, any perception that you might have about the brand should be brought to mind by the logo, but your logo is not your brand. And so in that light, there are many things that the church has done since they adopted the visual identity program back in the 70s to contribute to the brand perception, the logo only being one of those things. When this version of the logo was introduced, it came about with a lot more public relations efforts than it did when we did it back in the 70s. This version was accompanied by public relations releases, which talked about the value and importance of placing the name Jesus Christ central and more important. So I did have opportunities to contribute and work on other design projects and contribute literally to the perception of the brand in other arenas, including the highly acclaimed Homefront series. That these were the public service announcements that the church produced, and it's in fact just 40th year anniversary, just a month or two. These have won a lot of Clios and a lot of Emmys. This is the packaging for those. The packaging was sent along to radio and television stations in an effort to entice them to to show these public service endowments. This is on the subject of teenage depression, and the headline, the cover, was "Two Common But Little Used Cures for Teenage Depression," and you open it up in a pair of ears. And as a matter of fact, I just read a blog by a columnist in the New Yorker magazine who talked about the import and value of these Homefront commercials when he was a child, and he went on to suggest that, in fact, I think I've got a quote from them. Let's see if I can find it here. Yeah, he called them, he's a Catholic columnist for the New Yorker magazine. He praised the ads and said that he called them very well made, well written, very effective. He, in fact, preferred them, he said, to the current I Am a Mormon campaign. The article is titled "The Rise and Fall of the Mormon TV Commercial," referring to the rise being these Homefront PSAs, and the fall being the current I Am a Mormon campaign. This was another packaging for another Homefront that I worked on. So, President Hinckley was a one-man brand ambassador for the church. Having grown up in radio and television and responsibilities at the church from an early time, he truly had a significant impact on the brand perception of the church. He, as you may be aware, had an interview with Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes, and one newspaper article said that it was President Hinckley who ambushed Mike Wallace in terms of his approach and his warm, friendly, and cordial approach in what was typically a rather antagonistic sort of a program. He also later had an interview with Larry King. And then the 2002 Olympics, which someone recently dubbed the first Mormon moment. The Church Olympic, the church where really took advantage of Olympics in terms of being able to put out a message, and yet they did not. They did not proselytize, but they certainly took an opportunity to really provide to the media the kinds of materials that they would prefer that they understood about the church. So the church debuted the very first website back in 1996. It had kind of very low-key beginning compared to the way they are now. But they did use the church logo that had been introduced just a year prior, and it's so small you can't even read it, but it does say up in the corner, "The official internet site of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints." Kind of an odd sort of way to phrase it. It was under the URL lds.org. Recognizing the value of a website for investigators, in 2001, the church launched Mormon.org. Today, the church's web presence is dramatic in its scope. The church maintains five different, very deep websites. This is the original LDS.org, which is primarily for members, and then there's Mormon.org. This is the current version, primarily for investigators of the church. Then there's Mormon Newsroom, about official church news. Then there's the MormonChannel.org, which is the church's media service providing values-based news content.
And then FamilySearch.org, the genealogical resource for the church's efforts in genealogy. I think it's interesting that three of the five church websites use the term Mormon in the URL. And despite the church's official preference for using the full name of the church and suggesting that using the term Mormon has been discouraged, that the church in fact recognized what is commonly used and used that in the URL of three of those five websites. It's really not unlike, yeah, question?
Hi, Randall, thank you. Two questions. First one is with a heavy dose of humor, so prepare yourself.
Okay.
Reaching back to the slides that you had the church's name and the font was being discussed.
Right.
In that phase, did anybody of rank ever talk about changing, shortening the church's name? Again, very humorous, but was it ever brought up on any level by anyone?
No, I don't think it was. I mean, okay. We did talk about, we did consider a symbol for the church as opposed to what we designers call a logotype. What we designed for the church is a logotype. We did consider symbol. We did consider the angel Moroni, the Christus statue, Salt Lake Temple, but which would serve, in it, from a graphic design point of view, to shorten the name, so to speak, because the symbol could have become the most important graphic element. It could be used in a simpler and smaller fashion than could the long, long name. But
trumpeting Moroni.
Yeah, it never got very far. Particularly considering the kind of scriptural foundation for the church name, there was never really any idea other than using the church name.
Now my serious question.
Okay.
Do you suspect that other churches of equal size and membership put as much energy on the topics you discussed as we do?
No. I do not think so. I mean, I am not an expert on branding of religions, but I had a conversation with one of the guys in my office who's a Catholic, and he said, "Boy, I can't imagine the Catholics ever doing anything like this." And he said it would be too hard, too difficult to. He said the Knights of Columbus would put up a real fight, if you tried to take away their logo, The point I'm making about the church adoption of Mormon is not unlike what has happened many times in modern corporations, to take a name that is more commonly used by the public and adopt it in a fashion. I mean, the word Mormon has immediate recognition, and it has clear associations on who it is, and not unlike what Coca-Cola says, let's just use Coke. I mean, that's shorter, right? Federal Express, that's a lot shorter. FedEx is a lot shorter than Federal Express. Both of those terms came about because of common use. And so despite the fact, the church kind of officially discourages the term Mormon, the fact that they put it in three of those URLs, I think, was smart from a branding point of view.
Hey, Randy, does the church have a logo for the word Mormon?
No. Not that I'm aware of. I don't believe it does. Peggy.
I did a story about that, the fact that they were using Mormon instead of LDS, even though they're pushing reporters to use LDS. And they told me that the reason is because in the search engines, people were looking for the word Mormon, not LDS, and so they wanted to own that. They didn't want people to look for other sites with the word Mormon in it.
That makes sense.
And so they completely backtracked on that to make their website see Mormon.org.
Yes?
Question. I heard rumors about this, but the church doesn't have the copyright on the word Mormon.
I think that copyrights don't go back that far. So, no, I think that's pretty
I think they've trademarked it. They did five attempts they did 5 requests to get a trademark, and they got rejected, but on the 5th time, they finally got it. So they
you can trademark anything. You can trademark, trademark names and visual identities. You could in fact, trademark the identities that we designed, either one in the 70s or the current one. But that's different than... trademarks depend upon its visual characteristics, and so yes, you can trademark it, but you couldn't.
See, the trademark or registered. I read all these proceedings, and maybe I'm using the wrong terminology.
Right.
But they registered. They kept requesting. They wanted to own the name Mormon. They finally got ownership of that. It took them 5 attempts to do it. I want to say trademark. Maybe I'm using the wrong term.
I think the church wants the media and us to use the full name when we're talking about the church,
right,
as an institution. But what would we call ourselves? The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in, or something. So they say when you're referring to an individual, then go ahead and say, I am a Mormon. But not the Mormon Church. I think that's the distinction.
And I think you're right.
They make, and so, do you have any comment on the big media blast in New York where they did the big billboards?
Yeah, I'm going to be getting to that in a moment.
I'm a Mormon.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. Facebook, the church has at least... 4 or 5 Facebook pages, much like they do, correlated in fact to their website pages, that with the LDS, the Mormon Channel, and the Mormon Newsroom. The content on the Facebook pages are similar to what's the content in their websites. I thought it was interesting that in 2008. There was a rumor going about that the church, and this sounds a little funny now, 4 or 5 years later, considering the IPO of Facebook, but there was a rumor going around that the church was going to buy Facebook. And and what I found interesting was that some tech blogs actually said that it was a credible rumor. And in fact, let's see if I have that. No, it said. This one tech blog said that... I can't find it. But that the idea that the church might be buying Facebook was credible, and felt so if you looked at the church's existing social media and their interest, and that it wasn't as far-fetched as you might think. No.
I took down a video, and normally it takes me to YouTube, but instead of going to YouTube, it took me to Facebook this time to see the video.
So, I mean, so Facebook is a common end result of your searches. YouTube, the church also has a YouTube presence using... primarily for the I Am Mormon campaign, but other content as well. The church has significant official content on Twitter. I don't even know how many Twitter accounts they have. They've got the Mormon Channel. They've got Mormon Newsroom. They've got Tabernacle Choir, which I thought was kind of funny because it's their handle, their Twitter handle is at Motab. at Motab Choir. Last Easter weekend, the church conducted a social media blitz like they had never done before, using all of the media available at their disposal. A spokesman said, "The church now looks at social media as a new type of town square, a digital representation of how missionaries
once spread the church message at the town square. So if you haven't recognized it yet, the official church is a juggernaut when it comes to social media, and has specifically recommended that church members get involved as well. This is from LDS.org, where they talk about that effort. There's many Mormon mommy bloggers have become rampant, and they were some of the first to get in on blogging. Mormon moms in particular are were recognized in Gawker, which is a tech blog for the rise of Pinterest. Pinterest is a new social media that's visually oriented. And the church's SEO efforts are highly praised. SEO, if you're not familiar with that, refers to search engine optimization. If you type in the words like church or Jesus or Christ or other terms which would likely bring you search results in many different areas of the world, the church places very, very highly for, I mean, obviously they place very highly if you type in the word Mormon or LDS, but they place very highly for generic terms like church and the Savior's name, and it shows that the church has really worked hard and has one SEO expert said after doing a lot of research, the words the LDS Church would like to be associated with it are very prominent, and others it does not are not as prominent. It's an amazingly good job by them. The current big push of the church is the I Am a Mormon campaign, which someone referenced. It's playing everywhere from YouTube to Times Square in New York City. And this month, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette said, Pittsburgh became one of the test markets for the advertising campaign that cheerfully counters stereotypes of Mormonism as Mormons as straight-laced, white, humorless, and sexist. The campaign has received a lot of publicity, including a lot of parody. I Am an Ex-Mormon copies on YouTube are almost as prevalent as I Am a Mormon. So going to wrap it up here with just the comment that that the term faith branding has actually made it into Wikipedia. And Wikipedia said, faith branding is the concept of branding religious organizations, leaders, or media programming in hope of penetrating a media-driven, customer-oriented culture more effectively. Essentially, faith branding treats faith as a product and attempts to apply the principles of marketing in order to sell the product. Faith branding is a response to the challenges that religious organizations and leaders face today regarding how to express their faith in a media-dominated culture. So, we don't have a respondent, but I'm happy to answer any questions or comments that I can provide answers to. Thank you.
I wonder if the church has done any research, or if they've you've heard of any church conclusions about how their efforts in different PR areas, professional PR areas like this, have contributed to the growth rate of the church, which doesn't seem to be accelerating at the same time that their efforts are accelerating.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. I mean, I think that there, I think I have heard anecdotally, at least, about changing the perception of the church via these efforts, and I mean they're pretty lean efforts. I mean they really. I mean the church is going about it these efforts in fashion that is unlike other religious organizations, but on a level of, you know, major corporate efforts. And I do think it's having an effect in terms of perception, but whether or not it's having, you know, the end result of increasing conversions, I'm not aware. That'd be interesting to learn about that. Yeah.
So, when you presented the logo proposal, first of all, were you in whites? Were they in temple dress?
No. Okay. They were dressed in suits, as was I.
So, I mean, it's kind of breathtaking then, because these are conservative guys, and this is a really progressive proposal. And whereas, like you say, they didn't adopt it for themselves, what do you think made them receptive to it?
Well, I think that, you know, well, first of all, you know, I think it changed from the 70s when we made that presentation to the 90s when the new church logo came out, and there was a much greater understanding after, you know, it came under the auspices of the missionary department. I think there's a great, much greater understanding of the value of managing the perception of the church via all these means. But back in the 70s, I think that it was really the impetus of this welcome sign and the idea that this could be a tool and something that would be of value in front of meeting houses. And if it wasn't for that, I doubt that it would have made the progress it did. Because it was an issue. I mean, this whole idea of standardizing the church's identity in terms of the logo didn't come from, you know, public communications department or the missionary department. It really came from the graphic design department, and we didn't have any weight, or we didn't have any consequence to what we did or thought. But because there was this idea that this welcome sign might be valuable, we just kind of slipped it in there. And it was approved. Why they didn't adopt it to this day for their own letterhead is, you know, just it bugged us, frankly. It bothered us a lot that you know, that they would approve this and say, yeah, this is fine for everyone else, but not for us. It was bothersome, but, you know, because no one tells them what to do. So that's the way it remained. Yes.
A comment and a question. First, Randall, this is really, really cool. I hope that you can put it in an article format for SASTA magazine, because Wear magazine is perfect, you know, with all the visuals that you have. Question is, when I saw the logo on the TV, for the first time it dawned on me that whereas the old logo had more or less the proportions of an old inset,
yeah,
the new logo also has the proportions of the white screen.
Yeah, that's true. It is much wider. We were four lines, and it was three lines. That's true. It's true. That's probably more coincidental than anything. But I mean, we certainly suggested the importance of having the identity in all broadcast media, the same as in print media, and so that was something we felt important about. But I think the thing that drove the design of the new logo was the Jesus Christ and Nathan Henry. Yeah?
I've heard that the I'm a Mormon campaign was kind of inspired by the I'm a Scientologist campaign. Do you know anything about
that? I don't.
Which came first?
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I do.
Do you, Peggy? That's
I wrote a story about this also. It's not necessarily inspired by it, but in fact, this is called identity branding, which is having a lot of faiths are doing. There's a Catholic version of it. There's a Methodist version of it. Scientologists. It's essentially the same thing. Mormons have a sort of slicker, more visual. They have more money, frankly.
Did the Scientologists come first with the Pope? Everybody else copied them?
Scientologists did come first, but I'm not sure anybody, you know.
You don't know who the original
it's,
I'm a something.
It's, yeah, it was, it's an advertising. I mean, it actually came first with corporate, you know, and colleges. And it's a trend in advertising.
Do you remember the old Unitarian ads that said, Jesus came to save you from your sins, not from your mind?
Yeah, I do remember that.
That was huge, wasn't it? And then it disappeared. I wonder why.
How does such a stodgy organization as the church get so progressive in their PR?
it truly is amazing when you think about it. I mean, it's particularly the social media. Now, I'm not a social media expert, but I mean, they are at the forefront of social media. They are pushing the wave. I mean, and they're recognized by individuals who are experts in social media, and they blog about it. They said the church, you got to see what the church is doing. I mean, it's astounding that they have been so progressive in this fashion. Now, you know, I guess historically the church has always looked towards technology and media as valuable tools, going back to the early 1900s. And so perhaps it's in line with the general idea of taking advantage of technology and media to further the church cause. But I do think it's interesting that someone as, what did you say, stodgy and conservative and traditional, the church hierarchy and led by people in their 90s, you know, has been able to adopt these kinds of mediums that are so progressive. Yes.
Going along with that, do you know how much of this is done in-house?
It's nearly all done in-house. Yes.
So we would say that most of this is being done by every church.
These are, yes, nearly all of these social media efforts, all of this. There are things that come through Bonneville Communications, but all the I think nearly all the social media is done in-house. Some of those outreach efforts, like I was involved with, and some of those Homefront campaigns and things like that. And in fact, I have even, my firm has worked on some banner advertising for the church. A few years ago, when they were doing Book of Mormon, get a free Book of Mormon, we helped create some banner advertising. But and I remember we had my Catholic employee in photograph, and we just about had that running, and then at the last, Brian said, you know, I think it'd be better if I wasn't the picture in this ad that's going to run for the performance campaign, and we switched him out at the last minute. But and of course, we're independent of the church. But social media in particular is I think nearly all done in-house.
But their effort, in the overall effort, the branding effort, I imagine that they do hire some big firms.
Yeah, well, certainly when it comes to other things like public relations, I know that they've engaged New York public relations firms. So I was referring mostly to social media when I talked about their in-house efforts.
So I wonder what in-house efforts are they still on the petitioner?
I suspect that this is under the missionary department, I would think. But that's just my assumption of knowledge.
You mentioned that Wikipedia has a definition for fake branding.
Correct.
Do you think that there's been any backlash because of our extreme efforts in branding our religion?
Well, I think there's some degree. And as I prepared for this presentation, certainly see a few that have thought that it was overboard, but I don't think on the whole it's been criticized too highly. How are we doing time-wise, Mike?
I think we need to wrap it up.
We're wrapped up.
Sorry about that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.